Welcome to this afternoon's program of At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Erin Fitzpatrick broadcasting from Roberta's Restaurant in Brooklyn, 4 p.m. Tuesday, today and every Tuesday on the 23rd of February. And dare I say, it's the break of spring. This always happens at this time of the year. We think it's just about springtime and winter still hits us with one more storm, which could be coming this weekend. So we'll start today's show with the weekend wine recap with breaking news that the Portuguese island of Madeira has been hard hit by flash floods and landslides this past weekend, causing over 32 deaths so far through the total is expected to rise. It's been said that nothing like this has happened in the past century quite so devastating, and one may have to go back to the historic flood of 1803 to find a flood so damaging on the island. Fortunately, however, there has not been significant damage to the vineyards. Some producers who store wine near the capital of Funchal, which was devastated, have been unable to determine the status of their inventory at this point, but at the wineries in Madeira, they've escaped largely unscathed. And in the crop report, California Department of Food and Agriculture's preliminary crush reports said 3.7 million tons of wine grapes were harvested in 2009, up more than 20% on 2008 small crop. This crop will put additional pressure on the already struggling premium segment of the wine business. The largest production increases came in the Central Valley and Lodi areas, traditionally used for lower-priced wines. And the market for higher-end grapes wine remained one of the caution. Nick Frey of the Sonoma County Wine Grape Commission told Decanter.com, with grape prices expected to fall further this year. And lastly, in the market feed, French wine exports dropped lowest levels in 10 years. The value of French wine exports plummeted by nearly 20% last year, their lowest level in a decade. AOC wines were most affected, with the value of champagne exports plunging by 28%. Nearly every market except China registered a decline. Ruby France attributed the declines on a number of factors, including the lower price of 2006 Bordeaux vintage and competition from cheap sources of wine in the New World, notably Australia and Argentina. The agency is planning more than 140 separate initiatives during 2010 aimed at reinvigorating exports in both traditional and emerging markets. And hopefully my guest this afternoon, Christopher Tracy from Channing Daughters in Long Island, will shed some light on some good things in the industry after all this discouraging news. We'll be right back with Christopher after this short break. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, At the Root of It, on heritageradionetwork.com. And for our listeners joining us this afternoon, please call in with any questions or comments at 718-498-2127. And a thank you to our sponsor this afternoon, Hearst Rants in Simeon, California. And a big welcome to our guest this afternoon, Christopher Tracy from Channing Daughters in Bridgehampton, Long Island. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good. Thank you. Just before the show, we were speaking about some news in the Long Island wine industry, which I recently heard that Long Island was established by the Center for Wine Origins, along with Rioja, as a established place.
Well, yeah, the Long Island wine industry, as we know it, the commercial industry has been around since the mid-70s, and there's three American viticultural areas out there, AVAs, what our appellations are here in the United States, and they're the North Fork of Long Island, the Hamptons, and Long Island. It can be a blend of the two, or the few vineyards that are a little bit further into Western Suffolk and Nassau. But there is this organization, which I don't know that much about, this Wine of Origin Initiative, that is a group of regions from around the world that have gotten together and signed on to promote and protect place names. And that's an important thing, especially in this country, though. It's been a long time, but we did for many years, especially in the early days of the California industry, label things Hardy Burgundy and Chablis and Champagne, and didn't give those regions the due respect that they deserved. So there's been a real push to protect place. Mm-hmm. And we do that in America through our AVA system, and various people do it in France through the Appellation Contrôlée system or the DO system in Italy or whatever it may be. But there has been this organization, which I, like I said, don't know that much about, but has gotten together in places like Rioja, places like Long Island, several French regions have mm-hmm. signed on to protect and promote particular place names, which is hugely important to us because we think that's one of the great things about Long Island. We have a very specific spot on the earth with its own particular characteristics and factors that go into creating the delicious and expressive wines that speak of our particular spot, our particular place in the world, which mm-hmm. is the East End of Long Island.
Yeah, I'd say that's some good news to share with us this afternoon.
Absolutely. After your pessimistic intro.
I know. Usually there's a little bit of something good in there, but I couldn't find quite so much today on the news flashes. So tell us about your involvement with Channing Daughters. You're a partner and the winemaker.
Yes, I'm the winemaker there. There's four partners at Channing Daughters Winery. Walter Channing is the principal owner. He bought the piece of property in the late 70s, 1979. There's 125 acres on the property, and just under 100 are permanently preserved with the Peconic Land Trust, which is also very important to us.
Yeah.
And then we have 28 acres of planted vineyards on the estate as well. Walter met a man named Larry Perrine in the mid-90s. Larry is one of the other partners, and then myself and Allison Dubin, who's our general manager, are the four partners of Channing Daughters. And so Larry is a soil scientist. He was the first research viticulturalist hired by Cornell University to run the research extension out in Riverhead in the early 80s. And he's one of our country's great viticulturalists, a real unsung hero. And like I said, a soil scientist, and has been a winemaker and run businesses out there. So he met Walter in the mid-90s, was hired to come and rehabilitate the vineyards, which were in a little bit of shabby shape at that time. They got together, drew up a business plan in 95, built the building, and the first wines were released in 97. Allison and I came and met Larry in 99, and in 2000 were involved with some projects out there, and then I created my first couple of wines, Vino Bianco and L'Enfant Sauvage in 01, and then we moved out there full-time of 02, and I finished those 01 wines and have made the wines since.
Okay.
So we have a really dynamic, interesting, creative group of people,
mm-hmm.
And we definitely beat to a different drum. We definitely walk a little bit of a different path than most of the people out on Long Island.
Definitely. What was the first wine or varietal that was used during the first vintage in 1999?
Chardonnay and Merlot.
Okay. Very typical.
Chardonnay and Merlot are hugely important. The largest plantings of white grapes are Chardonnay, and of red grapes are Merlot. And we still love and work with Chardonnay and Merlot in a big way. We have mm-hmm. Many acres planted and many wines based on those. But we also grow white and red grapes and make styles and varieties that unfortunately other people aren't working with. So we grow things like Tokaj Friulano, Malvasia or Malvasia, depending on where you're from.
Sure.
Ribolla Gialla, Pinot Grigio, Sauvignon Blanc, Dornfelder, Blaufränkisch, Refosco, Teraldego, Lagrange. So we definitely have a little bit of a different approach to our particular place, our particular terroir, and what the best wines I think can be made out there.
Now, you said, unfortunately, people aren't playing with. Do you find, I actually was drawn to your winery, your wines, given that you really were experimenting with some cool varietals that you don't see out there. Do you find that that creates a different niche for you, or would you rather see other people kind of, following in your footsteps.
Both, you know, yeah. Both. Of course, it's great for us. We do have a particular niche market where we have wines that nobody else is making. And so, yeah, you can garner interest and acclaim and sales because of that fact. But at the same time, too, you want the whole region, you know, to succeed, not just one or two or three wineries. And we feel that the potential for many of these grapes out on the East End is huge. So it would be nice if other people did work with some of the grapes.
Sure.
I mean, yeah, we would lose our niche, but it is, I think it's an important thing. And we have seen, you know, everybody influences everybody from all around the world in different regions to your neighbors in your own particular region. And, you know, we made Vino Bianco in 2001. That was the first, you know, marrying out blended white wine. It was combining Chardonnay and Pinot Grigio with Tokaj Friulano and Sauvignon Blanc. And it was one of the first blended white wines commercially released on the island. Up to that point, it was more, you know, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, that sort of thing. And now there are, you know, dozen plus blended whites that you wouldn't normally have thought would have gone together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great thing, I think, for the region, because we obviously believe
makes
in blended
it
white wines. And
yeah, yeah.
And it's just, I think, goes a long way to creating more complete, complex, and delicious wines.
Now, you're situated in Bridgehampton, which is on the South Fork. And as we know, there's fewer wineries there than there are on the North Fork of Long Island.
That's correct. We're one of three wineries on the South Fork. It's just us, Wolfer Estate in Sagaponack, and Duck Walk in Southampton. You know, we are in the Hamptons, and that has its mostly benefits, but, you know,
right,
drawbacks
sure.
as well. And one of the drawbacks is that land is very, very expensive, and most people would rather buy it and build very profitable, although that might not be the case in the last couple
sure.
of years. But,
yeah.
You know, mansions and real estate to play into the, you know, posh Hamptons and beach culture and summertime thing that we attract. And so there's less agricultural land out there, and that's really unfortunate. You've seen it squeezed out much, much quicker than the North Fork. But the same thing is happening on the North Fork as now, too, and
yeah.
we see more and more agricultural land disappearing, which is one of the great things about having the vineyards, too, because not only is it a great place to grow wine in a world-class wine region, but it is a way to keep the open space and the agricultural aspect of that place, because it certainly is a more profitable crop than cauliflower or potatoes.
True, right.
That has been, you know, a real history and very important out there for many years.
Now, do you see the difference in climate between the two forks, you know, and the ability to plant these grape varietals that differently?
There's more similarities, I think, than there are
differences. Okay.
Of course, there are differences, and the South Fork may be a degree or two cooler, and that doesn't sound like a lot, but it can result in the difference of 4 to 8 or even 10 days between bud break and harvest. So we are a little bit cooler. We have a more severe Atlantic influence because we're literally, as the crow flies, just about 3 miles from the ocean. But there's more similarities, I think, than there are differences. I think the differences from, let's say, Bridgehampton to Southhold on the North Fork are as similar and different as they are from Orient to Riverhead, just within the North Fork. So I think whenever talking about place, you really have to kind of drill down into the specifics, and every particular plot, every block, and every vineyard is a little bit different than the one adjacent or the one across
sure.
the bay or the one, you know, across the country. And each you have to sort of figure out and listen to and be inspired by their particular factors, I think, to take the best advantage of the grapes and then fashion the wine from that.
Sure. Another thing that I thought was really interesting in how I was turned on to your wines is that I was a big fan of Legrain and Tokaj, and noticed that when I came to your tasting one afternoon, there was somebody there who explained that, you know, latitudinally, Channing Daughters is situated in a similar, you know, line to Northern Italy. So thus, it gave you more of a inclination to plant these different grape varietals that have thrived in Northern Italy because it was latitudinally aligned with your winery. Is that some
you know, it's a factor.
Yeah.
Again, and so, you know, all wine is grown basically between the 30th and the 50th parallel, whether we're in, you know, the southern hemisphere or the northern hemisphere, and then we just switch the months that we grow it in, because those are the temperate climates. Once mm-hmm. we get too far south, you know, it's too hot, and once we get too far north, it's too cool, obviously. And we're about 41 degrees, or we're a little bit less, 40 and a half or something, and Bordeaux is 44 or something like that, and Friuli is 46 or something like that. So I think actually more importantly even than latitude, the most important parameters, I think, are temperature and water. And those, we do have, with both those regions I just mentioned too, the region in France, Bordeaux, and the region in northeast Italy, Friuli, Venezia Giulia, have very similar conditions in terms of water, and that's both in terms of growing season rainfall and humidity issues, which lead to a whole handful of challenges, and temperature issues. So our temperatures are very similar. It's not too hot. It's not too cool. And we also have... and the diurnal and nocturnal differences are very similar too. So both like Northeast Italy and us, many of our growing degree days, much of our heat summation happens at night too. So mm-hmm, between mm-hmm. all of these things, whether it's latitude and then more importantly to me, water and temperature and then soil and topography and aspect and all of these things, that all put together, you know, is terroir, and then the culture and the people. And so we have to figure out exactly what we have to deal with ourselves, and whether there are similarities between a region in France or a region in Italy or a region in Spain or a region in North America. We still have to drill down even further and see what yet the differences are, and then come to terms with how we're going to grow our grapes, mm-hmm. when we're going to harvest them, and how we're going to create them into wines.
I just love it. I think it's so unique, you know. It's
that's the great thing about
wine. You're such
wine.
A small property, but yet you're, you know, really thriving with all these different grape varietals, which are single varietal wines, you know, as well.
Yeah,
some
we,
of them.
Yeah, we make single varietal wines. We make blended wines now. But even within varietal wines, even within 100% Chardonnay or Tokaj Friulano or what it may, we're still blending. And that's one thing that we at Channing Daughters really, really believe in, even within varietal labeled or bottled wines, because we're still blending different vineyard sites or different blocks within the vineyards mm-hmm. or different barrels or different tanks. For instance, our Scuttlehole Chardonnay, a beautiful unoaked Chardonnay made in stainless steel, no malolactic, that secondary fermentation, is now actually a blend of fruit from the North Fork and the South Fork. So we get fruit coming off our property that might be a gram higher per liter in acid, and fruit coming off the North Fork that may be a gram lower per liter in acid. And instead of having to adjust things in the cellar, I can blend the juice and the wine and create great balance naturally.
Uh-huh.
And that's a really, really wonderful thing.
Well, I'd love to talk to you more a little bit about this, as well as some things that you do outside of the winery, one being the Master of Wine program. We are going to take a short break and be right back.
Great.
You ain't got to guess who's back. You see, I'm so shy that you thought I was bashful, but this bastard's flow will bash your skull, and I will cut your girl like Pastor Troll. And I don't usually smoke, but Pastor Droll. And I won't give you that money that you asking for. Why you think me and Dane cool? We assholes. It's why we hear your music getting fast forward, cause we don't wanna hear that weak shit no more.
Throw your motherfucking hands.
Get them high.
All the girls pass the weed to your motherfucking man.
Get them high.
Now I ain't never tell you to put down your hands.
Keep them high.
And if you're losing your high, then smoke again.
Keep them high.
Now who the hell is this? Emailing me at 11:26, telling me that she 36:26 plus double D. You nine girls on Black Planet B when they get bubbly at NYU, but she hailed from Kansas. Right now she just lamping, chilling on campus. Sent me a picture with her filling on Candace, who said her favorite rapper was the late great Francis. W-H-I-T.
Welcome back to At the Root of It. A thank you to our producer, who's doubling as the engineer today, Jack Inslee, and to our sponsor, Hearst Ranch. My guest today is Christopher Tracy from Channing Daughters Winery in Bridgehampton. And we just wrapped up last segment speaking a bit about the varietals that have thrived in the vineyards there, given their environmental climactic factors. And I wanted to speak a little bit about something we haven't had a chance to talk about on the program yet, which is the Master of Wine degree. And fortunately, Christopher is pursuing that right now. So if you'd love to tell our guests a little bit about the program.
About the Masters of Wine program?
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing. So there's master everything now, right? Master
yeah.
chefs and master electricians. And yes, there are masters of wine. And there's also master sommeliers. And that should be pointed out too, I think, because it's helpful for people to know there's the what's referred to as the MW program or Master of Wine program, and then the MS program or Master Sommelier
right.
program. And they're both born out of British institutions.
Mm-hmm.
The Master of Wine program is the Institute of Masters of Wine. And the Master Sommelier program, I believe, is the Court of Master Sommeliers.
That's right.
And the MS program, Master Sommelier program, is much more geared to people that are working as sommeliers and wine directors. And it's actually verbal testing through, you know, when they blind taste and
sure.
that sort of thing.
More service-driven.
And service-driven.
Yeah.
Whereas the Master of Wine program is all evaluated through the written word, including your blind tasting examinations, and seems to be more a collection of writers, educators, critics, though more and more people in production you see getting involved. I mean, there's 278 Master of Wines in the world represented from at least 28 countries, and
mm-hmm.
that could be more. You can go on their website and
sure.
see all that information. And there's only a few wine producers within that, but it's particularly important and interesting to me because I find myself to be an eternal student, and
sure.
I like the discipline and rigor of the program. And not only am I a wine producer, but I'm a wine consumer, and
mm-hmm.
I love wine from all over the world. And I benefit as a consumer, and I benefit as a producer from continually to push myself to learn more about what I do, learn more about what my colleagues do, and learn more about what my people that inspire me from around the world do. So the Institute of Masters of Wine, you present yourself as a candidate and you're accepted into the program. And it's really a lonely do-it-yourself program. there are, you know, you are assigned a mentor, and you can
right.
take advantage of the mentor program and send in past essay assignments or test questions. And they will help you because it really is through the written word, through essay writing. You get the MW when you complete 4 days of examinations,
okay.
a theoretical exam and a practical exam. The theoretical exam is given over 4 days, one exam a day, paper one, paper two, paper three, paper four. And the first two papers are viticulture and vinification. The third paper is the business and marketing of wine. And the fourth paper is contemporary issues, though obviously those things can bleed into and over each other as well. And then every three of those days, too, you're given the practical examination, and that's a tasting of 12 wines blind, also evaluated through the written word. So you sit down, and there's 12 wines in front of you, and there's usually 14 or 15 pages with essay questions, short essay questions that you have to answer. Once you complete those two things and you pass the practical and the theoretical, which you have three chances to do, and
okay.
that's it, then you submit a proposal for a dissertation for an original piece of research for the wine industry, and then you have a year or so to do a 10,000-word dissertation. And once you complete all three sections, then you have the Master of Wine bestowed upon you.
Okay.
And you become a member of the Institute of Master of Wine. But, you know, what's really interesting and so important too is it's what it means is that you have a base of knowledge. And this is never fulfilled because the world of wine is continuing to grow so much every day. And with, you know, the globalization of everything, it's much more complex than
sure,
even the
definitely.
Exam was 20 or 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your base of knowledge. And then right on top of that, you have understanding. And that's when you start to understand the knowledge that you have. Within right above that, you have clarity. And that's the ability to clearly communicate your understanding of this knowledge that you have accrued. On top of that is agility. And that gives you the opportunity to synthesize this information and come up with connections and key points that allow you to have the mastery of the subject.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have that knowledge, you gain the understanding, you have the clarity of thought and communication, and you have the agility to think globally, to think interdisciplinary, to synthesize that information into original thoughts, then you can become a master of one.
Well said. Yeah, very eloquent.
So it's a little bit much. You know, yeah. There's a week every year where we go out for a seminar, and that's really the only time you come together. That's why it really is very much a lonely.
And that's in Napa, right?
You can do it in either Napa in Europe or in Australia.
Okay.
And then the exam, the same, is given on the same day every year in Europe, or actually London, Napa and Sydney, I believe. And so we go out for a week every year, and you can go to one of those three locations, and you have basically a series of mock exams. And you sort of feel alternately wonderful if you have a particularly good day, and completely beat up,
yeah.
You know, punched and like you were dragged into a dark alley. And that's good because, and it's not only about these things too, but you need to also then come up with the stamina, be able to write in the system that they want you to write, be able to write for 4 or 5 hours a day. So, you know, there's a lot of
many different angles. Yeah. Now, have you decided what your dissertation is about yet?
I have not.
You have not. Okay. So my understanding is that you can complete the Master of Wine on your own accord, your own schedule.
Well, once you enter the program, you have an evaluation after the first year, and then they keep you as a student or tell you to repeat the first year or tell you to go back and back later.
Okay.
Then you get into the second year, and once you've gone through the second year, you are eligible to sit the exam. But you don't have to sit the exam. And it's encouraged that you don't sit the exam until you are ready. Because once you do sit the exam for the first time, that's when the clock starts ticking.
Gotcha.
And you only have 3 chances to do it. So you don't want to sit before you're ready. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I've been in the program now. This was my 3rd trip out. So I've been in the program for 3 years. And I'll hopefully, if all goes well, try and sit for the exam in June of 11. But you don't know, and you want to make sure you're ready.
Yeah. And then how has that prepared you changed you, if it has at all, with respect to your current role at Channing Daughters?
Well, I think everything about it. I mean, and it's not just as a wine producer too, but just as a human being. I think it allows you to be more thoughtful, more inquisitive, and a clearer communicator.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps problem solving, whether it's a wine problem or a business problem or a marketing problem or a human relations problem or whatever it means. So across the board, it's helped me, I think, just
navigate,
be better.
Kind of. Yeah. And do you find that, you've learned things regarding marketing? I mean, I feel like Long Island's in this crux because there's this never, more so than now, people are gravitating towards things, locally and trying to support people who are doing things very true to the nature of, the heritage of the grape, whether it's, food or agricultural driven, given that we're speaking about that now. I'll talk on that subject. But it's still, to me, it teeters with Long Island wine not having the support that you think it might have from local areas.
Well, it's really changed. That's true and not true.
Yeah.
And Long Island, and it really has changed a lot in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's great. I'm glad to hear that.
Gone are the
you.
Days
yeah.
of the, old white male tuxedo taste fan around his neck where only the only thing that was legitimate was French wine.
Yeah.
And it's a much younger culture and many more women are involved, much more of a local emphasis. But Long Island has really grown up, and for many, many years, the wines have been world class and recognized as such by restaurateurs in New York and around the country, and by critics from all over the world as well. You still get people that, poo-poo Long Island, but they do that with any region. And when you think about things too, and you go and you look at the top restaurants in New York and see the representation that Long Island has, no, not every producer has it, and And yes, there could be more, but there is an awful lot of representation as well that other regions around the world would be clamoring for. And New York is a very particular place because this is one of the wine capitals of the world, where people have at their fingertips the choices of the best from everywhere.
That's true.
And it's not a provincial place, and it really has an international focus. So I think for Long Island, you know, to have as many placements as, you know, Austrian Grüner Veltliners or whatever else on a particular list is quite impressive. But you do have to work for it in New York. I mean, you know, you can
nothing
make
comes
it here.
Easy here.
No, you can make it here. You can make it many, many places.
Yeah. Well, we have to start wrapping up, but I just wanted to also ask you about the beautiful labels and the artwork that's on those labels and how it corresponds to what's at your winery.
Yeah, well, many of the labels have the work of Walter Channing, our principal owner, who's a wood sculptor. So the beautiful upside down tree that you see on several of the labels, or the beautiful carved feet you see on L'Enfant Sauvage or the Medusa mask on the brick kiln, are actually large scale wood sculptures that adorn the vineyards and the property and the sculpture garden. And it really is a very magical and creative place. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, when Walter met Larry and brought him on, he very much gave Larry Perrine that blank slate to create what he wanted to create. And Larry really wanted to move forward with those fresh un-oak styles and those fresh wines that celebrated the place that they were from. And when we came on, Larry very much handed us that same tabla rasa as well. And so we have a very artistic approach to the way we make wine, and a very almost farmer's market chef approach to what we do with the fruit when it arrives on the crush pad. And that extends into the creative spirit and the artwork that adorns the property.
Wonderful. And for our listeners who are not yet able to go out to Channing Daughters before the springtime hits, where can they pick up some of your bottles in the city?
Well, they can always go online to www.channingdaughters.com and order directly from us. And as more and more states open up with direct shipping, even obviously in New York we can, and all around the country, more and more we can as well. But many of our wines are in, you know, great 2-, 3-, 4-star restaurants all over Manhattan and Brooklyn and New York City. And also great stores like Astor Wine and Spirits and Union Square and Chelsea Wine Vault and Appalachian and Sherry Lehman. And you can go online and take a look at where our wines are available too, and find out. And
thank you. Yeah, great. We will support. Continue to support.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for coming. Yeah, until the next time.
Cheers.
And thanks again to our producer, engineer Jack Inslee, and to our sponsor this afternoon, Hearst Ranch. Look forward to seeing you next week.
El antifaz que tu maldad cubría cayó para exhibir.